Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 1, side 2. "He was always very kind to me," he said at last. "And also to R2, of course." Luke raised his cup to his lips, hiding another smile behind it. "You have a unique perspective on the universe, 3PO," he said. From the corner of his eye, he saw 3PO stiffen. "I hope I didn't offend you, sir," the droid said anxiously. "That was certainly not my intent." "You didn't offend me," Luke assured him. "As a matter of fact, you might have just delivered Ben's last lesson to me." "I beg your pardon?" Luke sipped at his drink. "Governments and entire planets are important, 3PO, but when you sift everything down, they're all just made up of people." There was a brief pause. "Oh," 3PO said. "In other words," Luke amplified, "a Jedi can't get so caught up in matters of galactic importance that it interferes with his concern for individual people." He looked at 3PO and smiled. "Or for individual droids." "Oh, I see, sir." 3PO cocked his head toward Luke's cup. "Forgive me, sir, but may I ask what that is that you're drinking?" "This?" Luke glanced down at his cup. "It's just something Lando taught me how to make a while back." "Lando?" 3PO echoed, and there was no missing the disapproval in his voice. Programmed politeness or not, the droid had never really much cared for Lando, which wasn't very surprising given the circumstances of their first meeting. "Yes, but in spite of such a shady origin, it's really quite good," Luke told him. "It's called hot chocolate." "Oh, I see." The droid straightened up. "Well then, sir, if you are indeed all right, I expect I should be on my way." "Sure. By the way, what made you come up here in the first place?" "Princess Leia sent me, of course," 3PO answered, clearly surprised that Luke would have to ask. "She said you were in some kind of distress." Luke smiled and shook his head. Leave it to Leia to find a way to cheer him up when he needed it. "Show off," he murmured. "I beg your pardon, sir?" Luke waved a hand. "Leia's showing off her new Jedi skills, that's all. Proving that, even in the middle of the night, she can pick up on my mood." 3PO's head tilted. "She really did seem concerned about you, sir." "I know," Luke said. "I'm just joking." "Oh." 3PO seemed to think about that. "Shall I tell her you're all right, then?" "Sure," Luke nodded. "And while you're down there, tell her that she should quit worrying about me and get herself back to sleep. These bouts of morning sickness she still gets are bad enough when she isn't worn out tired." "I'll deliver the message, sir," 3PO said. "And," Luke added quietly, "tell her I love her." "Yes, sir. Good night, Master Luke." "Good night, 3PO. He watched the droid go, a fresh flow of depression threatening again to drag him down. 3PO wouldn't understand, of course. No one on the Provisional Council had understood either. But for Leia, just over 3 months pregnant, to be spending the bulk of her time here. He shivered, and not from the cool night air. "This place is strong with the dark side." Yoda had said that of the cave on Dagobah, the cave where Luke had gone on to fight a lightsaber duel with a Darth Vader who had turned out to be Luke himself. For weeks afterward, the memory of the sheer power and presence of the dark side had haunted his thoughts. Only much later had he finally realized that Yoda's primary reason for the exercise had been to show him how far he still had to go. Still, he'd often wondered how the cave had come to be the way it had, wondered whether perhaps someone or something strong in the dark side had once lived there, as the Emperor had once lived here. He shivered again. The really maddening part of it was that he couldn't sense any such concentration of evil in the palace. The council had made a point of asking him about that, in fact, when they'd first considered moving operations here to the Imperial City. He'd had to grit his teeth and tell them that, no, there seemed to be no residual effects of the Emperor's stay. But just because he couldn't sense it didn't necessarily mean it wasn't there. He shook his head. Stop it, he ordered himself firmly. Jumping at shadows wasn't going to gain him anything but paranoia. His recent nightmares and poor sleep were probably nothing more than the stresses of watching Leia and the others struggling to turn a military-oriented rebellion into a civilian-based government. Certainly, Leia would never have agreed to come anywhere near this place if she'd had any doubts herself about it. Leia. With an effort, Luke forced his mind to relax and let his Jedi senses reach outward. Halfway across the palace's upper section, he could feel Leia's drowsy presence. Her presence, and that of the twins she carried within her. For a moment, he held the partial contact, keeping it light enough to hopefully not wake her any further, marveling again at the strange feel of the unborn children within her. The Skywalker heritage was indeed with them. The fact that he could sense them at all implied they must be tremendously strong in the Force. At least, he assumed that was what it meant. It had been something he'd hoped he would someday have a chance to ask Ben about. And now that chance was gone. Fighting back sudden tears, he broke the contact. His mug felt cold against his hand. Swallowing the rest of the chocolate, he took one last look around. At the city, at the clouds, and in his mind's eye at the stars that lay beyond them. Stars around which revolved planets, upon which lived people. Billions of people. Many of them still waiting for the freedom and light the New Republic had promised them. He closed his eyes against the bright lights and the equally bright hopes. There was, he thought wearily, no magic wand that could make everything better. Not even for a Jedi. 3PO shuffled his way out of the room, and with a tired sigh, Leia Organa Solo settled back against the pillows. Half a victory is better than none, the old saying crossed her mind. The old saying she'd never believed for a minute. Half a victory, to her way of thinking, was also half a defeat. She sighed again, feeling the touch of Luke's mind. His encounter with 3PO had lightened his dark mood, as she'd hoped it would, but with the droid gone, the depression was threatening to overtake him again. Perhaps she should go to him herself, see if she could get him to talk through whatever it was that had been bothering him for the past few weeks. Her stomach twisted, just noticeably. It's all right, she soothed, rubbing her hand gently across her belly. It's all right. I'm just worried about your Uncle Luke, that's all. Slowly, the twisting eased. Picking up the half-filled glass on the nightstand, Leia drank it down, trying not to make a face. Warm milk was pretty far down on her list of favorite drinks, but it had proved to be one of the fastest ways to soothe these periodic twinges from her digestive tract. The doctors had told her that the worst of her stomach troubles should begin disappearing any day now. She hoped rather fervently that they were right. Faintly, from the next room, came the sound of footsteps. Quickly, Leia slapped the glass back on the nightstand with one hand as she hauled the blankets up to her chin with the other. The bedside light was still glowing, and she reached out with the Force to try and turn it off. The lamp didn't even flicker. Gritting her teeth, she tried again. Again, it didn't work. Still not enough fine control over the force, obviously, for something as small as a light switch. Untangling herself from the blankets, she tried to make a lunge for it. Across the room, the side door opened to reveal a tall woman in a dressing robe. "Your Highness," she called softly, brushing her shimmering white hair back from her eyes. "Are you all right?" Leia sighed and gave up. "Come on in, Winter. How long have you been listening at the door?" "I haven't been listening," Winter said as she glided into the room, sounding almost offended that Leia would even suggest such a thing of her. "I saw the light coming from under your door and thought you might need something." "I'm fine," Leia assured her, wondering if this woman would ever cease to amaze her. Awakened in the middle of the night, dressed in an old robe with her hair in total disarray, Winter still looked more regal than Leia herself could manage on her best days. She'd lost track of the number of times when, as children together on Alderaan, some visitor to the Viceroy's court had automatically assumed Winter was, in fact, the Princess Leia. Winter had probably not lost track, of course. Anyone who could remember whole conversations verbatim should certainly be able to reconstruct the number of times she'd been mistaken for a royal princess. Leia had often wondered what the rest of the Provisional Council members would think if they knew that the silent assistant sitting beside her at official meetings or standing beside her at unofficial corridor conversations was effectively recording every word they said. Some of them, she suspected, wouldn't like it at all. "Can I get you some more milk, Your Highness?" Winter asked. "Or some crackers?" "No, thank you," Leia shook her head. "My stomach isn't really bothering me at the moment. It's, well, you know, it's Luke." Winter nodded. "Same thing that's been bothering him for the past 9 weeks?" Leia frowned. "Has it been that long?" Winter shrugged. "You've been busy," she said with her usual knack for diplomacy. "Tell me about it," Leia said dryly. "I don't know, Winter. I really don't. He told 3PO that he misses Ben Kenobi, but I can tell that's not all of it." "Perhaps it has something to do with your pregnancy," Winter suggested. 9 weeks ago would put it just about right." "Yes, I know," Leia agreed. "But that's also about the time Mon Mothma and Admiral Ackbar were pushing to move the government seat here to Coruscant. Also about the time we started getting those reports from the borderlands about some mysterious tactical genius having taken command of the Imperial fleet." She held her hands out, palms upward. "Take your pick." "I suppose you'll just have to wait until he's ready to talk to you," Winter considered. "Perhaps Captain Solo will be able to draw him out when he returns." Leia squeezed thumb and forefinger together, a wave of anger-filled loneliness sweeping over her. For Han to have gone out on yet another of these stupid contact missions, leaving her all alone. The flash of anger disappeared, dissolving into guilt. Yes, Han was gone again. But even when he was here, it seemed sometimes like they hardly saw each other. With more and more of her time being eaten up by the enormous task of setting up a new government, there were days when she barely had time to eat, let alone see her husband. "But that's my job," she reminded herself firmly. And it was a job that, unfortunately, only she could do. Unlike virtually all the others in the Alliance hierarchy, she had had extensive training in both the theory and the more practical aspects of politics. She'd grown up in the Royal House of Alderaan, learning about system-wide rule from her foster father, learning it so well that while still in her teens, she was already representing him in the Imperial Senate. Without her expertise, this whole thing could easily collapse, particularly in these critical early stages of the New Republic's development. A few more months, Just a few more months, and she'd be able to ease off a little. She'd make it all up to Han then. The guilt faded, but the loneliness remained. Maybe, she told Winter. In the meantime, we'd better both get some sleep. We have a busy day tomorrow. Winter arched her eyebrows slightly. There's another kind? She asked, with a touch of Leia's earlier dryness. Now, now, Leia admonished Muck seriously. You're far too young to become a cynic. I mean it now. Off to bed with you. You're sure you don't need anything first? I'm sure. Go on. Scat. All right. Good night, Your Highness. She glided out, closing the door behind her. Sliding down flat onto the bed, Leia readjusted the blankets over her and shifted the pillows into a more or less comfortable position. Good night to you two, too, she said softly to her babies, giving her belly another gentle rub. Han had suggested more than once that anyone who talked to her own stomach was slightly nuts. But then she suspected that Han secretly believed everyone was slightly nuts. She missed him terribly. With a sigh, she reached over to the nightstand and turned off the light. Eventually, she fell asleep. A quarter of the way across the galaxy, Han Solo sipped at his mug and surveyed the semi-organized chaos flowing all around him. Didn't we, he quoted to himself, just leave this party? Still, it was nice to know that in a galaxy busily turning itself upside down, there were some things that never changed. The band playing off in the corner was different, and the upholstery in the booth was noticeably less comfortable. But apart from that, the Mos Eisley Cantina looked exactly the same as it always had before. The same as it had looked the day he'd first met Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi. It felt like a dozen lifetimes ago. Beside him, Chewbacca growled softly. Don't worry, he'll be here, Han told him. It's just Dravis. I don't think he's ever been on time for anything in his whole life. Slowly, he let his eyes drift over the crowd. No, he amended to himself. There was one other thing different about the cantina. Virtually none of the other smugglers who had once frequented the place were anywhere to be seen. Whoever had taken over what was left of Jabba the Hutt's organization must have moved operations off Tatooine. Turning to peer toward the cantina's back door, he made a mental note to ask Dravis about it. He was still gazing off to the side when a shadow fell across the table. Hello, Solo, a snickering voice said. Han gave himself a three count before turning casually to face the voice. Well, hello, Dravis, he nodded. Long time no see. Have a seat. Sure, Dravis said with a grin. Soon as you and Chewie both put your hands on the table. Han gave him an injured look. Oh, come on, he said, reaching up to cradle his mug with both hands. You think I'd invite you all the way here just to shoot at you? We're old buddies, remember? Sure we are, Dravis said, throwing Chewbacca an appraising glance as he sat down. Or at least we used to be. But I hear you've gone respectable. Han shrugged eloquently. Respectable's such a vague word. Dravis cocked an eyebrow. Oh, well, then let's be specific, he said sardonically. I hear you joined the Rebel Alliance, got made a general, married a former Alderaanian princess, and got yourself a set of twins on the way. Han waved a self-deprecating hand. Actually, I resigned the general part a few months back. Dravis snorted. Forgive me. So what's all this about? Some kind of warning? Han frowned. What do you mean? Don't play innocent, Solo, Travis said, the banter gone from his tone. New Republic replaces Empire. All fine and sweet and dandy, but you know as well as I do that it's all the same to smugglers. So, if this is an official invitation to cease and desist our business activities, let me laugh in your face and get out of here. He started to get up. It's nothing like that, Han told him. As a matter of fact, I was hoping to hire you. Travis froze halfway up. What? He asked warily. You heard right, Han said. We're looking to hire smugglers. Slowly, Travis sat back down. Is this something to do with your fight with the Empire? He demanded. Because if it is... It isn't, Han assured him. There's a whole spiel that goes along with this, but what it boils down to is that the New Republic is short of cargo ships at the moment, not to mention experienced cargo ship pilots. If you're looking to earn some quick and honest money, this would be a good time to do it. Uh-huh. Travis leaned back in his chair, draping an arm over the seat back as he eyed Han suspiciously. So what's the catch? Han shook his head. No catch. We need ships and pilots to get interstellar trade going again. You've got 'em. That's all there is to it. Travis seemed to think it over. So why work for you and your pittance directly? He demanded. Why can't we just smuggle this stuff and make more per trip? You could do that, Han conceded. But only if your customers had to pay the kind of tariffs that would make hiring smugglers worthwhile. In this case, he smiled, they won't. Travis glared at him. Oh, come on, Solo. A brand new government, hard-pressed like crazy for cash, and you want me to believe they won't be piling tariffs on top of each other? Believe anything you want, Han said, letting his own tone go frosty. Go ahead and try it, too, but when you're convinced, give me a call. Travis chewed at the inside of his cheek, his eyes never leaving Han's. You know, Solo, he said thoughtfully, I wouldn't have come if I didn't trust you. Well, maybe I was curious, too, to see what scam you were pulling. And I might be willing to believe you on this, at least enough to check it out myself. But I'll tell you right up front that a lot of others in my group won't. Why not? Because you've gone respectable, that's why. Oh, don't give me that hurt look. The simple fact is that you've been out of the business too long to even remember what it's like. Profits are what drives a smuggler, Solo. Profits and excitement. So, what are you going to do instead? Operate in the Imperial sectors? Han countered, trying hard to remember all those lessons in diplomacy that Leia had given him. Travis shrugged. It pays, he said simply. For now, maybe, Han reminded him. But their territory's been shrinking for 5 years straight, and it's going to keep getting smaller. We're just about evenly gunned now, you know, and our people are more motivated and a lot better trained than theirs. Maybe. Travis cocked an eyebrow. But maybe not. I hear rumors that there's someone new in charge out there, someone who's been giving you a lot of trouble, like in the Obroa Sky system, for instance. I hear you lost an Elamin task force out there just a little while ago. Awfully sloppy, losing a whole task force like that. Han gritted his teeth. Just remember that anybody who gives us trouble is going to give you trouble, too. He leveled a finger at the other. And if you think the New Republic is hungry for cash, think of how hungry the Empire must be right now. It's certainly an adventure, Travis agreed easily, getting to his feet. Well, it really was nice seeing you again, Solo, but I gotta go. Say hi to your princess for me. Han sighed. Just give your people our offer, okay? Oh, I will. Might even be some who'll take you up on it. You never can tell. Han nodded. It was, really, all he could have expected out of this meeting. One other thing, Gravis. Who exactly is the big fish in the pond now that Jabba's gone? Travis sighed him thoughtfully. Well, I guess it's not really a secret, he decided. Mind you, there aren't any really official numbers, but if I were betting, I'd put my money on Talon Karrda. Han frowned. He'd heard of Karrda, of course, but never with any hint that his organization was even in the top 10, let alone the one on top. Either Travis was wrong, or Karrda was the type who believed in keeping a low profile. Where can I find him? Travis smiled slyly. You'd like to know that, wouldn't you? Maybe someday I'll tell you. Travis. Gotta go. See you around, Chewie. He started to turn, paused. Oh, by the way, you might tell your pal over there that he's got to be the worst excuse for a backup man I've ever seen. Just thought you'd like to know. With another grin, he turned again and headed back into the crowd. Han grimaced as he watched him go. Still, at least Travis had been willing to turn his back on them as he left. Some of the other smugglers he'd contacted hadn't even trusted him that far. Progress, sort of. Beside him, Chewbacca growled something derogatory. Well, what do you expect with Admiral Ackbar sitting on the council? Han shrugged. The Calamarians were death on smugglers even before the war, and everyone knows it. Don't worry, they'll come around. Some of them, anyway. Ravis can blather all he wants about profit and excitement, but you offer them secure maintenance facilities, no Jabba-style skimming, and no one shooting at them, and they'll get interested. Come on, let's get going. He slid out of the booth and headed for the bar and the exit just visible beyond it. Halfway across, he stopped at one of the other booths and looked down at its lone occupant. I've got a message for you, he announced. I'm supposed to tell you that you're the worst excuse for a backup man that Travis has ever seen. Wedge Antilles grinned up at him as he slid out from behind the table. I thought that was the whole idea, he said, running his fingers through his black hair. Yes, but Travis didn't. Though privately, Han would be the first to admit that Travis had a point. As far as he was concerned, the only times Wedge didn't stick out like a lump on plate glass was when he was sitting in the cockpit of an X-Wing blasting TIE fighters into dust. So where's Paige anyway? He asked, glancing around. Right here, sir, a quiet voice said at his shoulder. Tan turned. Beside them had appeared a medium-height, medium-build, totally nondescript-looking man, the kind of man no one would really notice, the kind who could blend invisibly into almost any surroundings. Which had, again, been the whole idea. You see anything suspicious? Han asked him. Paige shook his head. No backup troops. No weapons other than his blaster. This guy must have genuinely trusted you. Yeah. Progress. Han took one last look around. Let's get going. We're going to be late enough back to Coruscant as it is, and I want to swing through the Obroa Sky system on the way. That missing Elamin task force? Wedge asked. Yeah, Han said grimly. I want to see if they've figured out what happened to it yet. And, if we're lucky, maybe get some idea of who did it to them. Chapter 3. The fold-out table in his private office was set, the food was ready to serve, and Talon Karrda was just pouring the wine when the tap came on his door. As always, his timing was perfect. Mara, he called. Yes, the young woman's voice confirmed through the door. You asked me to join you for dinner. Yes, please come in. The door slid open, and with her usual cat-like grace, Mara Jade walked into the room. You didn't say what? Her green eyes flicked to the elaborately set table. This was all about, she finished, her tone just noticeably different. The green eyes came back to him, cool and measuring. No, it's not what you're thinking, Carda assured her, motioning her to the chair opposite his. This is a business meal, no more, no less. From behind his desk came a sound halfway between a cackle and a purr. That's right, Drang, a business meal, Carda said, turning toward the sound. Come on, out with you. The Vornsker peered out from around the edge of the desk, its front paws gripping the carpet, its muzzle close to the floor, as if on the hunt. I said, out with you, Carda repeated firmly, pointing toward the open door behind Mara. Come on, your dish has been set up in the kitchen. Sturm's already there. Chances are he's eaten half your supper by now. Reluctantly, Drang slunk out from behind the desk, cackle purring forlornly to himself as he padded toward the door. Don't give me that poor little me act, Carda chided, picking a piece of braised burwelki from the serving dish. Here, this should cheer you up. He tossed the food in the general direction of the doorway. Drang's lethargy vanished in a single, coiled spring leap as he snagged the mouthful in midair. There, Carda called after him. Now go and enjoy your supper. The Vornsker trotted out. All right, Carda said, shifting his attention back to Mara. Where were we? You were telling me this was a business meal, she said, her voice still a little cool as she slid into the seat across from his and surveyed the table. It's certainly the nicest business meal I've had in quite a while. Well, that's the point, really, Carda told her, sitting down himself and reaching over to the serving tray. I think it's occasionally good for us to remember that being a smuggler doesn't necessarily require one to be a barbarian, too. Ah, she nodded, sipping at her wine. And I'm sure most of your people are so very grateful for that reminder. Carda smiled. So much, she thought, for the unusual setting and scenario throwing her off balance. He should have known that particular gambit wouldn't work on someone like Mara. It does often make for an interesting evening, he agreed. Particularly, he eyed her, when discussing a promotion. A flicker of surprise, almost too fast to see, crossed her face. A promotion? She echoed carefully. Yes, he said, scooping a serving of brewalki onto her plate and setting it in front of her. Yours, to be precise. The wary look was back in her eyes. I've only been with the group for 6 months, you know. 5 and a half, actually, he corrected her. But time has never been as important to the universe as ability and results. And your ability and results have been quite impressive. She shrugged, her red gold hair shimmering with the movement. I've been lucky, she said. Luck is certainly part of it, he agreed. On the other hand, I've found that what most people call luck is often little more than raw talent combined with the ability to make the most of opportunities. He turned back to the brewalki, dished some onto his own plate. Then there's your talent for starship piloting, your ability to both give and accept orders. He smiled slightly, gesturing to the table. And your ability to adapt to unusual and unexpected situations. All highly useful talents for a smuggler. He paused, but she remained silent. Evidently, somewhere in her past, she'd also learned when not to ask questions. Another useful talent. The bottom line, Mara, is that you're simply too valuable to waste as a backup or even as a line operator, he concluded. What I'd like to do is to start grooming you toward eventually becoming my second in command. There was no chance of mistaking her surprise this time. The green eyes went momentarily wide and then narrowed. What exactly would my new duties consist of? She asked. Traveling with me, mostly, he said, taking a sip of wine. Watching me set up new business. Meeting with some of our long-term customers so that they can get to know you. That sort of thing. She was still suspicious. He could tell that from her eyes. Suspicious that the offer was a smokescreen to mask some more personal request or demand on his part. You don't have to answer now, he told her. Think about it, or talk to some of the others who've been with the organization longer. He looked her straight in the eye. They'll tell you that I don't lie to my people. Her lip twisted. So I've heard, she said, her voice going noncommittal again. But bear in mind that if you give me that kind of authority, I am going to use it. There's some revamping of the whole organizational structure. She broke off as the intercom on his desk warbled. Yes, Carter called toward it. It's Avis, a voice said. Thought you'd like to know we've got company. An Imperial Star Destroyer just made orbit. Carter glanced at Mara as he got to his feet. Any make on it yet? He asked, dropping his napkin beside his plate and stepping around the desk to where he could see the screen. They're not exactly broadcasting ID SIGs these days. Avis shook his head. The lettering on the side is hard to read at this distance, but Torva's best guess is that it's the Chimera. Interesting, Carter murmured. Grand Admiral Thrawn himself. Have they made any transmissions? None that we've picked up. Wait a minute. Looks like... Yes, they're launching a shuttle. Make that two shuttles. Projected landing point... Avis frowned at something off-screen for a moment. Projected landing point somewhere here in the forest. Out of the corner of his eyes, Carda saw Mara stiffen a bit. Not in any of the cities around the edge? He asked Avis. No, it's definitely the forest. No more than 50 kilometers from here, either. Carda rubbed his forefinger gently across his lower lip, considering the possibilities. Still only two shuttles? That's all so far. Avis was starting to look a little nervous. Should I call an alert? On the contrary, let's see if they need any help. Give me a hailing channel. Avis opened his mouth, closed it again. Okay, he said, taking a deep breath and tapping something off screen. You have hailing. Thank you. Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, this is Talon Carda. May I be of any assistance to you? No response, Avis muttered. You think maybe they didn't want to be noticed? If you don't want to be noticed, you don't use a Star Destroyer, Carda pointed out. No, they're most likely busy running my name through ship's records. Be interesting to see someday just what they have on me, if anything. He cleared his throat. Star Destroyer Chimera, this is... Abruptly, Abe's face was replaced by that of a middle-aged man wearing a captain's insignia. This is Captain Pelion of the Chimera, he said brusquely. What is it you want? Merely to be neighborly, Carda told him evenly. We tracked two of your shuttles coming down and wondered if you or Grand Admiral Thrawn might require any assistance. The skin around Pelion's eyes tightened just a bit. Who? Ah, Carter nodded, allowing a slight smile. Of course, I haven't heard of Grand Admiral Thrawn either. Certainly not in connection with the Chimera, or with some intriguing information raids on several systems in the Pionid Abroa Sky region either. The eyes tightened a little more. You're very well informed, Mr. Carter, Pelion said, his voice silky, but with menace lurking beneath it. One might wonder how a lowly smuggler would come by such information. Carter shrugged. My people hear stories and rumors. I take the pieces and put them together, much the same way your own intelligence units operate, I imagine. Incidentally, if your shuttles are planning to put down in the forest, you need to warn the crews to be careful. There are several dangerous predator species living here, and the high metal content of the vegetation makes sensor readings unreliable at best. Thank you for the advice, Pelion said, his voice still frosty. But they won't be staying long. Ah, Carter nodded, running the possibilities through his mind. There were, fortunately, not all that many of them. Doing a little hunting, are they? Pelion favored him with a slightly indulgent smile. Information on Imperial activities is very expensive. I'd have thought a man in your line of work would know that. Indeed, Carter agreed, watching the other closely. But occasionally one finds bargains. It's the Isala Miri you're after, isn't it? The other's smile froze. There are no bargains to be had here, Carter, he said after a moment, his voice very soft. And expensive can also mean costly. True, Carter said, unless, of course, it's traded for something equally valuable. I presume you're already familiar with the Isala Miri's rather unique characteristics, otherwise you wouldn't be here. Can I assume you're also familiar with the somewhat esoteric art of safely getting them off their tree branches? Pelion studied him, suspicion all over his face. I was under the impression that Isala Miri were no more than 50 centimeters long and not predatory. I wasn't referring to your safety, Captain, Carter told him. I meant theirs. You can't just pull them off their branches, not without killing them. An Isala Miri in this stage is sessile. Its claws have elongated to the point where they've essentially grown directly into the core of the branch it inhabits. And you, I suppose, know the proper way to do it? Some of my people do, yes, Carter told him. If you'd like, I could send one of them to rendezvous with your shuttles. The technique involved isn't especially difficult, but it really does have to be demonstrated. Of course, Pelion said, heavily sardonic. And the fee for this esoteric demonstration? This book is continued on cassette number 2, side 1.